Chapter 1 Clyde Cooper sat on the bed, watching his wife, Abby, pull her stockings over each supple leg. He wondered for the 100th time when she'd finally come to her senses and leave him. From the first day he'd seen her, he knew he couldn't live without her. Then, just like now, he couldn't believe she'd even talk to him, let alone agree to a date, and later marry. Each time he looked at her beautiful face, he half expected someone to jump out and point and laugh at the cruel and intricate joke he'd fallen for. Then they'd walk off together hand in hand, and he'd never see her again. She caught him looking and gave him a radiant smile. Her lips shone from the expensive bright red lipstick she wore. "What are you staring at?" She put her soft white hand to her chest and demurred. "An angel," he answered. "A radiant angel." She giggled and turned away from him. She put on her bra and held the ends out behind her. "Be a dear and help the angel, please." He bolted from the bed and approached her white back, tastefully dotted with light brown freckles and moles. He took the two ends, and she cupped her thick, dark hair in her hands to hold it out of the way. It looked as though she held heaps of slow-flowing molasses. His hands shook slightly as he tried and failed to clasp the hooks. "Honestly, Clyde, you're all thumbs." He leaned forward and took in her scent. "God, you smell good." Goosebumps erupted on her neck, and she scrunched her shoulders and scolded him. "No, bad boy. We have to go or we'll be late." He sighed and concentrated on getting the clasps together. "It's your fault. You drive me crazy." He finally secured her bra, and she turned to face him. His eyes lingered on her breasts. She put her hands on her hips and shifted one seductively. "Do I need to send you out of the room?" He shook his head. "And miss the show? Don't be cruel. Most women demand some privacy, you know." He laughed. "In this postage stamp of an apartment? Good luck." "That's your own fault. Daddy offered to pay for something bigger, but your pride got in the way, remember?" His mood darkened at the mention of Victor Brooks, his new father-in-law. "I stand by my decision. You're married now. We don't need his money. We'll make our own way." She smiled sweetly and held out her arms. He took her hands and she said, "I know, and I agree, but saying something and doing something are a lot different. Half my clothes are still in my old room. I can't fit them in the closet here. And it's so dark and wet, I'm afraid they'd get ruined." "We'll get a bigger place soon. Mr. Witherspoon says more jobs are opening up at the paper because of the war. I'll get a reporter's pay once I move up. Real money. Enough to upgrade, at least. I promised to take care of you, and I will." She dropped his hands and continued dressing. "What's the war got to do with it? We're not involved yet." "Believe it or not, some guys are actually volunteering anyway. They say it's just a matter of time and they don't want to miss out."
"Who would do that?" she asked incredulously.
"Joe McCursky, for one. He's joined some group that's heading over to France to volunteer."
"Fight for the French? Does he even speak the language?"
"Hell if I know. Probably not."
"I'm not sure whether to be impressed or embarrassed for him. Can you imagine? What about your brother? Will he stay out of it?"
Clyde nodded. "Frank's stationed in the Philippines, far away from the troubles in Europe. He's having the time of his life, if his letters are true."
"Why wouldn't they be?"
"He doesn't want my parents to worry, and he knows anything he writes to me, I'll pass along to them. Well, most everything." He shook his head. "He's not lying, though. Some of his stories would be tough to make up." She looked at him pointedly, seeing his sheepish grin, and asked,
"Like what?"
"Stuff I wouldn't share with my parents or my virginal wife." Her face reddened and the color went all the way down her neck and stopped at her cleavage. He marveled.
"You are so beautiful."
"You're pushing your luck. One more pass and I'll kick you into the hall." "We could just stay in tonight. We'll tell them you've come down with a cold." She shook her head emphatically.
"No. My parents are expecting us, and we can't show up late.
no reason to give him another reason for... She hesitated, and he finished for her. Hating me?
He doesn't hate you.
He reared his head back and guffawed. The hell he doesn't. I'm not even sure hate is a strong enough word. Maybe loathe would be better. She didn't correct him. She put an expensive earring she'd brought from her old life and said,
Leave me alone and get dressed. Wear the black tie tonight. You're supposed to be in tuxedo, but your suit will have to do.
Yes, ma'am, he said and bowed. She giggled and said, Good boy. Maybe you'll get a treat when we get home. He held his hands beneath his chin, stuck out his tongue, and panted like a dog. Her laughter filled the tiny apartment, and he fell even deeper in love. A car pulled up in front of the apartment, and the driver, a large man with an ugly scar across his cheek, stepped out. He'd worked for the Brooks family for decades. He greeted Abby like a long-lost puppy. He held the door for her and effused, You look lovely tonight, my dear.
Oh, thank you, Sal. You're too kind. You remember my husband, Clyde?
Sal's smile faded. Yes, of course I do.
Clyde held out his hand, but Sal acted as though he hadn't noticed, and Clyde pulled it back in embarrassment.
Kind of you to pick us up, Sal. Sal ignored him until they were both inside, and he'd walked around to the front of the car and entered the driver's seat. He finally said, To tell you the truth, I wish I'd brought my piece. Nasty neighborhood.
He adjusted the rearview mirror, and Clyde saw his simmering eyes staring at him.
Abby said, You're being paranoid. It's a relatively safe neighborhood.
Sal sneered.
Relative to what? Poland?
Clyde's jaw rippled as he bit back his anger. Abby put her hand on his knee and squeezed, knowing her husband wouldn't rise to the bait with her in the car, but he sometimes surprised her. She said, Just drive us to the party, please, Sal.
Sal's eyes came off Clyde and focused on her. Of course, Miss Brooks.
Mrs. Cooper, she corrected him.
Oh, yes, my mistake. His eyes shifted back to Clyde before he pulled into traffic. 20 quiet minutes later, they pulled into the long driveway of the Brooks estate. Sal parked in front of the brightly lit fountain and walked around to open the door. Through the massive windows and beyond the lightly swaying silky curtains, the elite of Seattle, Washington mingled. Sal helped Abby from the car and held her hand too long for Clyde's taste. Sal ignored Clyde as he scootered over and exited through the same door. Clyde tapped Sal's shoulder, and the big man turned with a heavy scowl on his thick 5 o'clock shadowed face. Clyde smiled broadly and held out a shiny nickel. His voice took on an imperious tone as he said, For you, good sir. Excellent work. Sal took the nickel and stared at it. It looked tiny in the palm of his massive hand. He placed it between two fingers and flicked it away with a ting sound.
Fuck off, Clyde, he quietly growled.
Pleasure as always, Clyde replied, and caught up to Abby, who had stopped at the base of the stone steps waiting for him. She looked over his shoulder and saw Sal's simmering glare.
Everything all right? She asked Clyde as he approached.
He smiled and raised his voice enough for Sal to hear. Yes, my love, just tipping the help. Every little bit helps, you know, he said imperiously.
Halfway up the stairs, she leaned into him and whispered, Be careful. He's killed men before.
Really?
Yes, in the Great War. I just heard rumors, but that's where he got that scar on his face. It's from a German trench knife.
Clyde always felt tougher in her presence.
Really?
I thought it was a birthmark, he teased, and she scrunched up her bare shoulders and giggled. A tall butler held the door for them as they approached. Abby gave him a beaming smile, and he lifted his chin, and the corners of his mouth turned upward slightly. He said, Welcome home, Miss Abigail. She held out her hand, and he grasped it lightly, helping her across the threshold.
So good to see you, Mr. Haniger, she said.
You as well, my dear.
He released her hand and turned his attention toward Clyde.
Welcome to the Brooks Estate, Mr. Cooper.
Thank you. You look well. Mr. Haniger gave him a curt nod.
Thank you, sir. You as well. Married life suits you, it seems.
He raised his voice and announced their entrance.
Mr. and Mrs. Clyde Cooper!
A few folks looked their way, but most were too absorbed in conversation to take notice. Clyde leaned down and whispered in Abby's ear,
No one's used to your new name, it seems. I'm sure Father told Mr. Haniger to announce us separately, but he always plays by the rules of etiquette, not the whims of my father.
Mr. Haniger? He must have a first name.
Abby glanced back over her shoulder at the butler she'd known her entire life.
I'm sure he does, but I don't have a clue what it is. He's always insisted on Mr. Haniger.
Your father must know. After all, he signs the paychecks. Before she could answer, Abby's mother burst through a knot of flowing dresses and tuxedos with her arms extended.
Abigail, my darling, you've arrived.
She looked behind her at Mr. Haniger, who still stood like an imperious silver-haired statue.
I didn't hear you announced.
Abigail embraced her mother lightly, as though touching delicate china.
Oh, mother, she huffed, you're just not used to my new surname.
Clyde stepped forward.
Hello, Mum.
Abby gave him a withering look, but he maintained his smile. Meredith Brooks released her daughter and gave him a strained smile.
Hello, Clyde. So glad you could make it.
She looked him up and down and asked,
No tuxedo?
Sorry, I don't own one.
You married my daughter wearing one. Surely you haven't had time to ruin it already.
Abby's voice hardened as she said,
Mother, that's hardly...
It's all right, Abby.
Clyde touched her arm, then answered Meredith.
I borrowed that from a friend. He needed it back for Halloween, I'm afraid.
Meredith shook her head and touched her bejeweled hand to her chalk-white pearls hanging around her neck.
You're joking? She asked hopefully.
Abby touched her mother's arm and asked,
Where's Father?
Meredith's face hardened slightly, and she waved her hand haphazardly.
Oh, he's around here somewhere.
A server strolled up to them with a silver tray holding 6 flutes of sparkling champagne.
Ah, there you are, huffed Meredith. They each took a glass, and when the server turned away, Meredith tapped his shoulder.
Not so fast.
She drained the first glass and took another. The server lingered until she shooed him away with a flick of her hand.
Even the waiters are dressed better than you are, Clyde.
Oh, Mother, stop it,
Abby said as she took Clyde's hand in hers and squeezed.
What does it matter? It's a Christmas party.
Meredith held up the champagne and said,
Yes. Merry Christmas, then.
They held up their glasses and took sips. Clyde looked at the bubbling nectar with admiration and said,
That's lovely.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Clyde.
She rocked side to side and pointed at him mischievously.
I know what to get you for Christmas now.
The case of champagne?
He asked hopefully.
She tittered, then said, No, my dear. A proper tuxedo. It's early December, and there'll be plenty more parties. I'll make it an early Christmas present.
She drained the rest of her champagne in one gulp, and Abby lowered her voice and said,
Mother, you'll get tipsy.
Yes, I think that's the point.
Someone brushed past her, and she turned and embraced an older woman with far too much makeup on. Before whisking back into the social spotlight, she turned back to Clyde and Abby and said,
Have a lovely time, you two. See you around.
And with that, she melted into the mass of flowing gowns and black tuxedos. Clyde whispered,
She always drank like that. I don't remember that at the wedding. She's gotten worse, I think, and this is different.
Different?
How?
She gave him a look, which he'd learned to interpret as,
Figure it out, dummy.
He nodded and said, Ah, she didn't feel comfortable at our wedding. She was embarrassed. He said it without a shred of self-pity. Abby shrugged.
I think that about sums it up. Do you think they'll ever accept me? She turned to face him and looked deeply into his eyes. Doesn't matter. I love you, and you love me, and that's all that matters. He grinned. In other words, no. She laughed, and they moved into the crowd hand in hand. A few hours and several glasses of champagne later, the men and the ladies formed two separate groups. Clyde listened as Victor Brooks held center stage, telling business stories with a couple of rude jokes thrown in to keep people's interest. Eventually, as always seemed to happen these days, the talk turned to Europe and the raging war across the Atlantic. Victor effused, "Well, of course it would be good for business. Roosevelt's New Deal put the power in labor's hands, and look how that's worked out. War would force the government to work with manufacturing again. They'll need all sorts of goods. I've no doubt that business would thrive." An older businessman, with jowls that hung well past his jawline and jiggled when he spoke, asked,
"Yes, but would it be good for the country? By the sounds of it, it's quite awful."
Victor answered, "What's good for business is good for the country, Stanley. You know that as well as I do. It proved true for the Great War, and this one might be even bigger."
"Heavens, I certainly hope you're wrong about that."
"It's only a matter of time before we get involved. Hell, the Navy's already at war with the German U-boats."
"Not officially. They're protecting the shipping."
"Which are full of American supplies and merchant marines. They're not lobbing firecrackers at each other either. Men are dying on both sides, but mostly our side. The sooner we commit everything to the effort, the sooner we can shift that trend the other way."
Stanley chuffed and said, "Says the man who'd benefit the most."
Victor took a long puff off his cigar. His eyes turned from Stanley and drilled into his son-in-law. Up to that point, Clyde didn't know Victor had noticed him. Abby, yes, but the same fawning her father extended to his one progeny did not extend to Clyde. He blew a large plume of smoke toward the ceiling and said,
"My company would certainly benefit, but so would every facet of our economy. Hell, it's just what we need to pull ourselves out of the grip of this depression. That crazy son of a bitch Hitler and his Nazi henchmen are doing us a favor."
Ernest Wojak, whose parents lived in Poland, guffawed. "I don't think his victims look so favorably upon him. The last letter I got from my parents told of massacres and people being rounded up like cattle and shipped off to who knows where."
"Which is even more reason to get into the fight. We could stop the slaughter."
Wojak added with some bitterness in his voice. "And profit at the same time."
Victor growled, "Why not? When a good cause matches up with good business, everyone wins."
Stanley's jowls fluttered as he said,
"Men will die. American boys will die by the thousands. The Great War's scars are still too deep. No one wants to go back to war."
A handsome young man standing off to Victor's left stepped forward. Instead of a cigar, he puffed on a cigarette suspended on the end of a long ivory holder.
"I, for one, would gladly fight. The Boche need to learn a lesson, and this time we'd make it stick."
Clyde had noticed him earlier, but discounted him as just another spoiled son of the elite class. But now he noticed how Victor looked upon him as though he were a gift from God. Victor put his arm around him and said,
"That a boy. See, that's the spirit."
He released him and addressed the others.
"Men like Miles will win the war. Men with good lineage leading lesser men into battle."
Victor's eyes fell on Clyde for an instant, and Clyde felt his ears burn as they reddened. Clyde licked his suddenly dry lips. He stepped forward and directed a question at Miles.
"What branch of the service will you join?"
The broad smile highlighting Miles's perfectly straight white teeth diminished somewhat, and his eyes bore into Clyde's like ice picks.
"Cooper, is it?"
he asked.
"Clyde Cooper, yes. I'm married to Mr. Brooks's daughter, Abby."
Miles gave him a haughty sniff and answered,
"Yes, of course. As to your question, I hadn't really given it much thought. Whoever would have me, actually."
Victor said, "Any branch would be thrilled to have you, but you're far more valuable doing what you're doing now at Brooks Industries. I doubt the government would even allow such a thing."
The smile returned to its full, beaming grandiosity, and Miles said, "Pity, really, but I fear you're right, sir."
He leveled his icy gaze back at Clyde and asked, "What about you? Surely they'll be clamoring for your skills. What is it you do again?"
"I'm a newsman. I work for the Seattle Times."
"You're a reporter, then?"
"Not yet. I've only had the job for a few months, and someone has to retire or die to move up to reporter."
"Interesting. So what's your job, then?"
"I'm in the mailroom right now."
"Oh, well, good for you.
There's a job for everyone, isn't there?
How's Abigail adjusting to that?"
He looked at Victor and asked, "You must be helping them along, no doubt."
Clyde raised his voice, feeling his confidence growing along with the alcohol in his system.
"Not that it's any of your business, but we haven't asked for a single penny. We're quite happy doing it all on our own."
Miles smirked and said, "Apologies. I was rude."
He took another sip of champagne and continued,
"Perhaps entering the war would help you, too. Surely the service pays equally, if not better, than the Times. I hear the Navy pays a little more than the other branches."
"I've no intention of joining the service," Clyde said quickly.
"Not the patriotic type, then?"
asked Miles.
"What's happening in Europe isn't my business. I'm only interested in starting a family and taking care of Abby."
Victor's brow furrowed and he scowled darkly. "You won't go to war in your country's hour of need?"
Clyde swallowed and hoped his voice didn't crack.
"Hour of need? We're not at war. Why would I want to leave Abby all alone for some ill-begotten adventure?"
Victor's voice stayed low. "She wouldn't be alone. We're not going anywhere."
Mr. Wojak broke the growing tension between them. "You're a romantic, and you're obviously in love."
"Good for you, son.
Family first, I always say."
"Not before country," blurted Victor.
Stanley interjected,
"Really? Did you serve during the last war?"
Victor's color changed, and Clyde thought he might blow his top. Victor's eyes suddenly softened, and he looked beyond the group. Abby touched Clyde's shoulder, and her scent rolled over him. Her sweet voice quelled the group of men instantly, even seeming to waft the heavy clouds of cigar and cigarette smoke away.
"Excuse my interruption, gentlemen, but I must ask you to take your leave of my husband. I'm afraid I'm developing a bit of a headache and want to get home."
Miles stepped forward.
"Is there anything I can do, my dear?"
Abby gave him a withering look, which stopped him in his tracks.
"No, I just need my husband."
She wound her arm into Clyde's and squeezed. Clyde stared at Miles for a moment, then shifted to Victor.
"Thank you for the wonderful food and drink, sir. Can't wait to do it again very soon."
Victor waved him away and took his daughter in for a quick hug.
"Good night, my dear."
As Clyde and Abby left through the massive front doors, Clyde said, "Your father wanted you to marry that fellow Miles, didn't he?"
Abby smirked and shrugged.
"I grew up with Miles.
He works for father at the factory. His father died in a car wreck, and Miles had just graduated college and needed a job. He hired him out of respect for his father. That's all."
"He's handsome and rich."
She snuggled into his arm as they descended the stairs.
"Well, if you're so smitten, why don't you marry him?" she teased. Besides, I like my men handsome and poor as paupers. He laughed. You're an excellent liar, Abby. He kissed her on the top of the head.